By listening to the Conscious Fertility Podcast, you agree to not use this podcast as medical advice to treat any medical condition in either yourself or others. Consult your own physician or healthcare provider for any medical issues that you may be having. This entire disclaimer also applies to any guests or contributors to the podcast. Welcome to Conscious Fertility, the show that listens to all of your fertility questions so that you can move from fear and suffering to peace of mind and joy. My name is Lauren Brown. I'm a doctor of traditional Chinese medicine and a clinical hypnotherapist. I'm on a mission to explore all the paths to peak fertility and joyful living. It's time to learn how to be and receive so that you can create life on purpose. Today on the Conscious Fertility Podcast, I have back Dr. Eriu Zhang. We did an episode on donor egg cycles, and today we're going to be talking about egg freezing. So many of you are familiar with Dr. Zhang, but if you don't know her, she is a reproductive endocrinologist over at Olive Fertility Clinic. And she also, you do some teaching or mentoring over at UBC as well, do you not?
I do, yeah. I teach some residents and fellows at UBC on a regular basis, give some talks there.
And when I was looking at your bio, because I see you regularly at the clinic, but you know, it's neat when you go read somebody's bio, you get to learn a little bit more. But I didn't know you had a background in fertility and psychology.
I did. I minored in it in undergrad. So I really enjoyed physiology, but I also liked learning about why people do the things they do, like the behavioral aspect of things. So I really enjoyed psychology, social psych also. So I decided to put a bit more focus and do more courses in that in undergrad. But I've always had an interest in it.
Well, it's a good skill set, especially with our topic, because there's the whole physiological aspect of doing egg freezing. There's a lot of biology science behind it, but there's a huge psychological component too. So this is a great skill set to have when you're talking to those that are wanting to freeze their eggs.
I think so too, yeah.
Great. So, well, we're going to dive in. And so egg freezing is different than embryo freezing. And I just thought we'd kind of go through all the gamuts, the kind of common questions that I get at my clinic over at AccuBalance when they're seeing us. And obviously, we're always referring them to you because you're the ones that are doing the egg freezing. But can you share kind of who's using egg freezing? Like, what is the population that's coming to you because they want to freeze their eggs?
Yeah, you know, as people are getting, you know, the society is changing, right? And people are waiting longer to have kids and people are focusing more on their careers and on their education. And even people in relationships are finding that, you know, having kids right now is not right for them. We all know how crazy the housing market is in Vancouver and all these reasons. And they've done surveys where people look at, you know, how many kids do you think is ideal and how many kids do you actually intend to have? And they find there is a discrepancy. So I think people out there are maybe intending to have multiple children, but because of life circumstances or things are finding it's not possible to complete a bigger family as they had originally hoped. So there's kind of two camps, some people who want to increase their chances of having a bigger family, two or three children down the road, and then they freeze eggs well in advance of that. And lots of people who don't have a partner, who, you know, haven't found the right person yet to have children with. So we do see a wide range of people. And folks are also coming in younger, which I find is nice too. We used to see more people in their late 30s. I'm finding a trend now. People are coming in their earlier 30s, which is great, as the word's getting out. And I think more employers are recognizing the need for it.
And then there's the emergency group where I think it really started the egg freezing for those that like get a cancer diagnosis where mm-hmm. they take out their eggs. But like you shared, people are coming out to use it as fertility preservation because they want to delay having children for a career or whatever their situation is, or they don't have a partner yet. And so they want mm-hmm. to be able to have these eggs later on to have a child with that partner.
Exactly. And there's lots of other reasons too, like for example, if people have endometriosis or they're at risk of losing a big good portion of their eggs through ovarian surgery, or people who are about to have, like you said, emergency treatments for cancer, that's another role for egg freezing.
So I kind of want to talk about our like two groups. We have those that are coming in where they're in the reproductive age that you see the best success rates for egg freezing. And so those would be people in their 20s and early 30s. And then what's quite common still is where people are coming later in life in their late 30s, early 40s, looking to, can I freeze my eggs? And I kind of wanted to talk about both those camps because I think very different statistics and it's not equal with everybody.
Exactly. I think there's a fine balance with egg freezing too, and that's where you do find some of the psychology coming into this is, it is great to freeze your eggs as early as you can biologically speaking. That's when we're at our optimal egg quality. But of course, the younger we do it, I suppose the higher the likelihood that we may not ever have to use those eggs. So it's this delicate balance between when is the best time for you. The younger you do it, you may be spending a lot of money that you may not necessarily be in a financial spot to pay. And then also you may not actually need them if you realistically think you'll find a partner in the next couple of years. And also the younger you actually do start trying to conceive, the higher the odds that you would have success and never need to use the eggs also. So it's very individualized for someone. And on the other end of the spectrum too, as people are getting older, they may find that their need to freeze eggs is higher, but then the actual success rate is going to be lower because of the decline in egg quality that comes with older ovaries. So you do have to recognize that the longer you wait, you may need to end up doing multiple cycles to collect the number of eggs that would have given you the same amount of chances as, half the number of eggs from when you were younger.
So I'm going to share with you kind of how I sometimes discuss this with our patients. So they go in to see you equipped with asking really good questions. And so sometimes it works well that you don't have to do the general, you're always doing the general discussion, and we're going to do general here today. I'm going to tangent for a second. This is a general discussion, and I've heard you say it before, and I just want to reiterate it, that it's individualized. You do need to have a consult to find out what is your best protocol? How many eggs you need to freeze for the probability? And I'm going to emphasize probability to have a live birth, because there's a few things that I have found are you when I see the patients and talk to them is some of them are under the idea that they freeze eggs and those are all babies, future babies, and that's misleading because and they think of them like IVF, like I'm freezing eggs, like I'm freezing embryos, and those have very different success rates. So not all eggs turn into live births, right?
Correct.
And that's why you need, as you said, you need how many do you need to freeze in order to have a live birth? So when the individuals come and see you, sometimes when they look at the stats and see things on internet, on the Google and on the internet, they're just saying they're talking about how many eggs they got frozen. All the women are sharing, but really the important data is of those eggs frozen, how many turn into live births? And I would imagine still at this time, we got a lot of frozen eggs, but not a lot of the majority of those eggs probably haven't been used to create babies yet.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of unknown still, right?
There is totally. And, when you have them as eggs, you just really don't know what the quality is until it's time to come back and freeze and thaw them and use them. And so I say for any one individual person, no matter how many eggs they have, for them, it's going to be 0 or 100%.
Right.
But you have these probabilities that guide you and say, well, the younger you are, the more eggs you have frozen, the better the odds of success. But still, it's never going to be a guarantee. And so some people choose to do multiple rounds just to collect more eggs. But at the end of the day, exactly, you don't really know what's going to happen to them. This just the whole inefficiency of biology that you need so many eggs to result in an actual baby, because recognizing not every egg survives the thaw. And even if it survives the thaw, it may not fertilize with the sperm. And of course, the sperm plays a factor in all of this too, with regards to the quality of the embryos that you make. And then the likelihood not every embryo will also result in a live birth. So there's attrition every step of the way. And all we have are really just computer modeling to tell us, what are the odds? Because truly, not a ton of people have come back to use their eggs. And especially for some of our older folk, there's not a lot of data on the actual success of the people freezing their eggs over their 40s, because many people haven't come back yet and there's not many people doing it.
And you shared, so people are doing this for hope and it's a strategy. So this is not a guarantee, it's a strategy. Because if you're in a place where you're not able to have a child, you don't have a partner, whatever your life situation is, you're not ready to start your family. And as you shared, a lot of the younger women that come in their late 20s or early 30s that froze their eggs because that they're not going to have children till later, and they just wanted to know that they have the opportunity, if there's whatever the issues are, that they have some eggs that they can use. Like you said, a lot of them don't end up using those eggs because they end up finding somebody And through intercourse, they have a natural conception and birth. But that was their plan. They actually, when I see them, they're like, I hope I don't use these eggs. Like, I'm doing this just in case. So that is really an insurance policy. So that's not a failure in a sense. Like, that's not a, that wasn't a bad thing for that person. They literally said, this is going to let me sleep at night. This is a backup plan. And I hope I never have to use these eggs because I hope I'm going to be in a relationship, or when I'm ready to have a child, I'll be able to do this through natural means without having to thaw eggs and use them. So those people, that's their plan, right? And that's what you've seen as well. Like, they don't actually use those eggs.
Mm-hmm. I think of it as an option. It's like a backup option if plan A, which is finding your partner and trying, you know, the regular way is not working. And, you know, it may even be someone's like plan B, plan C, plan D. For example, if, you know, when the time comes, they could also turn to regular fertility treatments like IVF at the time when they're actually ready to start their family. And then if that doesn't work, then move into using their frozen eggs. So they have lots of other options too, beyond just automatically going to thaw their eggs. So I think of it as an insurance policy, yes and no, in that, you know, when we buy insurance, we want to know for sure there's going to be a payout. But this is kind of just one other thing you can think about using. And especially as people get older, I like to weigh it against, you know, what is the alternative? For example, we know that the data for egg quality is not good in women in their 40s. And we often discourage someone from freezing their eggs in their 40s just because the quality of the eggs is more uncertain. But at that point, it's really a discussion of like, well, what are your alternatives, right? Because if you wildly don't see yourself with a partner until you're in your mid 40s, or at that point, if you really are trying to get pregnant naturally, then your own natural success rates are so low at that point that, you know, the really viable alternative is to use someone else's eggs at that point. And for a lot of people, that's unacceptable, or they don't want to try that first. So I think, well, you know, at least having your 40-year-old eggs is maybe more acceptable to you than automatically going to donor eggs, say at age 45, if that's all you're left with. So it's a weighing of, you know, your options at the time. So you may be between, you know, you're not comparing them between your eggs from when you were 20, that ship has sailed, but now you're trying to weigh, you know, your own alternatives.
Yeah, it's strategy. It's looking at risk and probability, and that's why it's so individualized. I want to share, because I want to talk about the population that are still more common coming in their late 30s, because they thought, you know, career or family would happen, and then it hasn't happened, and now they're looking to freeze their eggs. And I'll share with a mutual patient that we had, that she was 40 and she wanted to have another baby. So she already had a child and that relationship had dissolved. So she was in a relationship, has a, you know, child's much older, and she wanted to have another baby. She's 40. She came to us to do preconception care. So she heard about our Nourish the Soul Before You Plant the Seed, that 100 days of preconception. And then her plan, which she did, was to freeze her eggs at 40. And she consulted with you guys and she knew the probability and risk. She just did one freeze, although, you know, based on her age, you guys shared how many numbers would be recommended for live birth, but this was how she was doing her assurance. And a happy ending. She's like the 20-year-olds. She never got to use her, she froze. I think that she got to freeze somewhere around 9 or 10 eggs, right, for herself. And again, statistically, when you guys look at your stats, that's a low number to turn into live birth. But she ended up meeting somebody and they were able to have intercourse. And at 41, she got pregnant and ended up having another baby. So again, same thing. It was just like, I want another baby. I'm going to try and do this. And again, she was aware of the odds and the risk and the chances. And it gave her opportunity. It brought her anxiety down that she had that on ice, those eggs. Mm-hmm. And she didn't end up needing to use them.
So, I think you make you make a great point that, you know, how many eggs you get from a round of egg freezing is in no way is predictive of your ability to get pregnant naturally. And so I see a lot of people, especially younger people, check their egg reserve and it gives them unnecessary anxiety because they think, oh, this is a test of my fertility. My egg reserve is low. I'm not going to do well with egg freezing. And so I also will have troubles getting pregnant. And those things are not related to each other. It's, you know, one doesn't predict the other. So even if you have not many eggs frozen from one round, doesn't necessarily mean you're less fertile. It's really just a numbers game when we look at, you know, checking your anti-Mullerian hormone to look at your your egg reserve. That helps us predict how many eggs we would get, but it doesn't predict how likely it is you are to spontaneously get pregnant if you just start trying.
And when you do the egg freezing, some of the, so just the process. So in Canada, here in Vancouver, you need to get a referral to you over at Olive. And then you guys would run some basic testing before you do any egg freezing to help with the consult. Like, so you mentioned the ovarian reserve. This is the quantity test, not the quality test. Age is kind of the quality test. How old are you? And then quantity test, you guys do the anti-Müllerian hormone test. So that's a blood test. You guys usually do the day three FSH. And do you guys still do the ultrasound for antral follicle count just to get a sense of the
still do that ultrasound for antral follicle count. D3 FSH, we're finding that the AMH is a way better test than the day three FSH. And also you can do the AMH at any point in your cycle, unlike the day three FSH. So it's a lot more sensitive. So we tend to use the AMH mostly to look at.
So the test is not very invasive. Yeah. So if somebody, they have to get this testing done, and then they come to you with that information, and that lets you know, kind of, you look at their age. There's the whole planning of how many children do you plan to have, right? Is it one child, two child, three child? And then based on their age, you can share. And I think you have a calculator on the Olive website under the egg freezing section. I'll see if I can even bring that up. It's just a general thing based on age. So again, I'm just going to share with people, because we'll put this video up as well. This is a podcast audio, but we will put the video up. On the Olive website, there's an egg freezing calculator. And in that calculator, then, like if somebody was 39, it gives you the percentage.
And I haven't played with this calculator on the website, but we do have one. If you were to come in for a consult, we do have one that predicts live birth. And excellent. I think it might be pretty similar.
Similar. Yeah. So you get your workup, you get a sense of your reserve, then you guys do the full history, and then you can give them a sense of, based on their age and other factors, how many eggs ideally they would freeze in order to get a live birth. And based on the ovarian reserve, again, this is the quantity, it doesn't mean it's one cycle. It could take 2, 3, 4. And here's where life can be cruel. As you get older, you need more eggs in order to have the probability of live birth. But as you get older, you end up getting usually less eggs each retrieval. So the older you get, you're going to need many more retrievals. And that's where life can be cruel. So somebody's at 40, which it's not a great age to freeze. You know, 20 is a better age than at 40. But this person who's at 40 that's looking for options, they can't be 20 again. So they're just looking, what can I do? So at 40, they would have to freeze many eggs, which could require many retrievals. And that's what I just want to share with the listeners. It's not like you just go in, freeze your eggs, and it's good. And whenever you choose to thaw, you'll have a baby. One is you may have to do multiple retrievals to get the number of eggs for a probability of a live birth. And then you're not making embryos with these, right? So not every follicle will have an egg when you retrieve. Not every egg will be mature. And then those are frozen. When you decide to make a baby, you go back to the IVF process. You thaw the eggs, inseminate with sperm, has to grow out to be a blastocyst, transfer, has to implant, make it to blood tests, ultrasound, live birth. Like there's so much, as you said, attrition. And so that's why there's got to be a lot of numbers, because at age 40, the genetic issues, the not being normal, these eggs could end up not being normal embryos, so therefore not make it to live birth. That's why you need more with age. Did I summarize that accurately?
Yes, exactly. That's exactly it. And yeah, and the kicker is that too, there's a lot of unpredictability with this. Is we do try to give you a realistic prediction of how many eggs you might get from one round. But at the end of the day, there's no way to actually know exactly how many you get without trying out the medications and just seeing how your ovaries respond. And it may be different month to month. For the exact same you, your AMH won't have changed much. You'll maybe be a few months older, but it's a different month. And in every given month, the number of eggs available to us changes a little bit. Even if we change nothing about your medication or the protocol of egg freezing, we might get 8 eggs one cycle, 12 eggs another cycle. So it is really hard going into this to try to set expectations for someone when they're coming in for their first consult, is recognizing there's a lot of error, not error, but there's just variability in trying to predict a person's response based on just two numbers, really, your age, your AMH. It's not perfect. And sometimes we overshoot or we undershoot the prediction. And that can be really disappointing for some people when they don't respond the way that their AMH predicts necessarily. But also, it doesn't mean that that's going to be the case for every single cycle. Sometimes we have a cycle where we don't do as well as we thought. The next cycle, we do way better. And it's a bit random. Sometimes it feels that way. So it is a tricky thing to try to counsel, you know, how many eggs would you expect? So we tend to give a range, recognizing that month to month it's different, especially, you know, for some people who are on the birth control pill for many years, it can make your AMH falsely low. So we talk about things like that with them.
I want to unpack that a little bit just because I can hear a panic in people. What? It makes it falsely low temporarily, and then after a couple of months, it will come back up. So I think what Ari was saying is that if you come right off the birth control and test your AMH, it may not be an accurate reading. You need to retest it again a couple of months later. Not that it stays like, artificially.
It
stays low.
It's not that the birth control pill gives you a lower egg count. It's just that if you were to test your AMH while on the pill, and if you've been on the pill for many, many years, it's going to give you a reading that might not be reflective of your true egg reserve. Right. It might be lower than what it actually is and make people panic. But really, if they were to come off the pill, let their ovaries wake up a bit and bounce back, you might find your AMH increases. And a personal experience with this where my AMH came back, you know, four times what it was when I was on the pill. So recognizing that, you know, this one number, it makes people, you know, change their life goals and their decisions sometimes. So at the end of the day, it's still just a number. It's affected by many things like your ethnicity and your weight and even being on things like hormonal birth control. And at the end of the day, it's still not a prediction of your chance of getting pregnant naturally. But yeah, it just helps us give a better ballpark of how many eggs we might expect if we were to stimulate them. But even that is a prediction and it changes month to month.
And then quality is an important issue. And I'd like to talk a little bit about things that can damage the quality, and, you know, because this is key. So if you're a smoker, you know, it can impact your egg quality, the environment, the endocrine disruptors. So oxidative stress, I call that body rust, can damage it. So you're looking to do things to reduce that, things that can damage it, and things that can improve the environment that your follicles and eggs mature in. And we'll talk a little bit more about that. And that's where we talk about a good diet, lifestyle. You know, it was making me think of a professional basketball player, LeBron James, because most professional athletes, you don't see too many professional athletes at age 40, right? So it's kind of like that fertility journey. There's a cutoff in the 40s. But yet he is unique in this way because at age 39 or 40, he's still dominating. The key here is he's not dominating like he was when he was 20 or 21 or 25, but he is much better than the 35 and 34 year olds in the league. But one thing interesting about LeBron is he treats his body like a temple. So for at least the last decade, the trainers, the diet, all the therapies he does, so he's been able to maintain the physicality, right? I'm sure when he was 19, 20, like most of us, he abused his body. But at a certain point, he really took care of it. And that's where I love this Nourish the Soil, the 100 Days of Preconception. Now, again, he did it for a decade. So really, for those that are listening and you're in your early 30s, if you're smoking, stop. And if you're excessive drinking, stop. But this whole idea of adequate rest, deep sleep, exercise, stress reduction, things that can increase blood flow to your system, you know, the diet and lifestyle, this can say something. And I was using LeBron James, the professional basketball player, because, you know, not all 40-year-olds are equal, right? And so we see this with him because he really took care of himself. So there's things you can do to take care of yourself on a cellular level. And I also want to share, though, so that means, you know, at 45, you can fix it. No, I don't think LeBron James is going to be playing basketball at 45 still, even though he's done well. He's taking such good care of his body that it is true that at 40 years old, there are women that can conceive easily at 40 years old. If somebody came, and we've had people come to my practice at 50, and I'm like, I don't think I can, you know, it's beyond, in Chinese medicine, beyond the reproductive span, and in Western medicine, same thing. And in the NBA, we don't have 50-year-olds. But if you're in your early 40s, some of you biologically may be really in your 40s. What happens is a lot of the people we see that come to us with fertility issues, although chronologically they're in their early 40s, biologically they're in their late 40s or 50s. And so the goal is, can we have you biologically as young as possible, which is as young as your chronological age? So we can get you biologically 40, then that's reproducible But if you're 50, the best we can do is 50. So this is me going on a tangent, just saying that really take care of yourself as much as you can. But even if you do, age is still a factor. So LeBron James is not going to be playing in the NBA probably at 45, even though he takes care of his body like a temple and he has the money to do that. But he's definitely extended his life to 40 in the NBA very well. So I wanted to talk about things, though, that can impact it. So if somebody's thinking of egg freezing, regardless of age, where they want to talk to a clinic like yours and also work with a clinic like ours where we're supporting the health of the cells, if somebody has endometriosis, that can impact egg quality and quantity, I believe, correct?
It can, yep. Certainly, especially if you've had surgery on your ovary already, where we worry that when there's been surgery done to remove, say, an ovarian cyst for endometriosis, that it's maybe removed some of the normal ovarian tissue with it also, and you risk damaging your ovarian reserve with that. So anyone with a history of ovarian surgery might benefit from a chat. Smoking is a particular bad one. Cigarettes on egg quality. And PCOS, it's hard to know. Like PCOS, people with PCOS tend to have higher egg reserves. And actually with egg freezing, that's usually a good thing. And we will always wonder, like, does it mean their egg quality is poor? But I think the science is still, you know, not convinced of that being a certainty. So it's not necessarily a bad thing if you happen to have a lot of eggs or a high ovarian reserve. It doesn't mean automatically your eggs are poor quality, but certainly PCOS is associated with lots of medical conditions that can impact egg quality. For example, if you have
diabetes, metabolic disorders, right? Which goes with
exactly.
Because you're saying if you have high ovarian reserve, that doesn't mean anything quality issue. But with PCOS, which often can have a high ovarian reserve, there's some hormonal inflammation and metabolic disorders. So there's those factors that I think potentially. I think of a woman that came to us after she had done IVF, PCOS. She doesn't ovulate on her own at all. So sometimes even with ovulation drugs, she wouldn't ovulate. Hence, that's why she went into an IVF. Her first transfer was chemical and the second was not successful. And she came to us because she's like, can you help balance my hormones? She knew she had high androgen levels. And she just thought, for uterine receptivity, can we help balance her hormones? She was overweight, lots of acne, hirsutism, bloating, depression. And so we worked with her over 4 months. And over those 4 months, she lost close to 20 pounds. We don't do any calorie counting. But once you change the diet and bring down inflammation, weight tends to kind of fall off naturally at a healthy way. Because I'm not a fan of big restrictive diets when you're trying to reproduce. It's not great. Her acne went away during this whole process. She said her hirsutism had changed. Her mood was good. Her digestion was improved. Remember, she's never ovulated on her own, and some not even with ovulation drugs. She ovulated naturally and got pregnant naturally, and she had her baby. But when we shared, I said, our medicine, Chinese medicine, is holistic, so I can't just focus on your uterus. It will focus on the whole body. And so if it's doing well, we should see some of these signs and symptoms change, which she did. And if it's able to regulate your hormones, you may ovulate again. She goes, well, I never have. I go, I know, but let's see if we can help put you into balance, basically, put it in general terms. And that's what happened to her. And she was just going to get ready to do her frozen transfer the next month, but she was able to ovulate. So when I think of PCOS, I think not that we're not certain, we need to do research. So this is speculative, but I think if you have the metabolic disorder and we see a lot of the signs like the acne, the hirsutism, then, and you're not ovulating or very delayed, I would suspect that environment may not be optimal, at least for egg quality. So it could impact it. It doesn't mean it's going to impact it, that it's not going to be good quality. Just saying take that same person where they don't have the disorder, they would have probably even better quality. So I still like to see those signs and symptoms disappear even before we do a transfer, just because we're always looking at that environment, hence nourish the soil to support the egg reaching its peak fertility potential. So endometriosis, PCOS, and then if somebody's very overweight or very underweight, that can impact their fertility and other health conditions probably. And if you're on lots of medication, so these are things where coming to see somebody like you at Olive, you get to help them and see what's going on, when to freeze, how much to freeze, and just kind of get a really good picture. And you're going to do the blood test, you'll do the antral follicle count. And because it really has to be individualized is what I guess I want to share, is that's been my understanding. Mm-hmm. It really, you can't just go to a website and look at a calculator and think that's what I need to do. They really need to talk to you to find out possibly how many retrievals will be needed how many eggs in order to have a live birth, and then bringing in your love for psychology, there's this, the whole, that there's that component too, right?
Mm-hmm. And we also talk about alternatives to egg freezing at every discussion, like how open would someone be, for example, to trying to get pregnant soon with, say, using a sperm donor or making embryos with a sperm donor. That's the other
Can we talk about that?
Yeah, we can.
Because their goal is to have a child. And so, because some of them don't realize that. Like, some of them are in a relationship and they come saying, I want to do egg freezing, and they're not aware that they could make an embryo with the partner. That's a rare case, but that has come into our practice. Like, you're married or you plan to have children with him. They were told by somebody at work that they should freeze their eggs. And embryo freezing is a higher success than egg freezing for that same individual, because you now have an embryo. So you have a better prediction. So help me word this. If somebody freezes their eggs versus that same person creates embryos, at the end of that egg freezing or embryo freezing, you would be able to give them a better prediction of live birth, correct?
Yes, because we know how embryos behave when we thaw them. The number one thing is they will survive the thaw way better than eggs will. Embryos, 99% of the time. So once you have the embryo frozen, you can be reasonably confident that that embryo will survive the thaw. Whereas eggs, it's closer to maybe 80, 90% thaw survival. And then you've already known that that egg has passed through all these hurdles to become fertilized, grow to become a good enough embryo that can be frozen in the first place. And so the embryo, once you already have it there, you've already passed all these hurdles whereas, you know, if you had 10 eggs, you don't know, you know, how many eggs would have died off in that process already. So once you have the embryo, we also know that we have way more statistics on just the live birth rate per embryo, because we've done many, many embryo transfers. So we can pretty confidently say, you know, in general, if you're under 35 when the embryo was made, pregnancy rate is about 60%, whereas with an egg, it's a lot more uncertain. So I like to say making embryos just gives you more insight into the fate of your egg up front while we're young enough to do something about it. For example, we make no embryos, or if we make a bunch of embryos and we test them genetically, and let's say they're all genetically abnormal, then we would know that now while we're younger, while we have the ability to do something about it, versus if we just froze the eggs 10 years later, or close to 50, let's say, and then we find out we make no embryos or they don't get us pregnant, then we'll really have no alternative at that point.
I got to ask you a question. Yeah. It's a tangent, but I don't want to forget this because it's the most common question I got. I just got it in my clinic this week. So she's come to me and she wants to freeze her eggs. She's not in a relationship and she's 35 and she wants to transfer them as soon as she can because she's over 35. She's going to be over 35. Can you share with the audience that the aging of the ovary is different than the aging of the uterus? So once you have embryos or eggs, it's, because you just said they transfer at 50. And I'm hearing this woman saying, I can't transfer my embryos at 40 because I'm 40. They won't work because I'm 40. But she froze them at 35. Can you kind of talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So you're right. Like our uterus does not age the same way the eggs do. And we could carry a pregnancy well into, you know, past menopause age, even in, you know, in our early 50s, perhaps. But at that point, for many people, the egg quality is not there. So as long as they're using younger eggs, they will have the same chance of pregnancy as the younger egg. And so you could transfer an embryo, no matter how old you are, really, but it's the chance of getting pregnant is dependent on how old was that egg, because that egg age speaks to the quality of the embryo, which predicts the chance of actually getting pregnant.
So it's not the age of the woman or the individual when embryos transferred. What was the age when the embryo was created or the egg was created?
Yes.
The egg was frozen or the embryo was created. That's the key. How old was?
Yeah. How old was the egg is her biggest predictor. Yeah.
And so there is some risk factors, but not so much for the uterine. It's just your older kidneys, older liver. Is there, when you're in your late 40s carrying a pregnancy, there's risk. Is it more risk of hypertension, diabetes, or there's
just more risk? Yeah, there's still other risks. So, you know, it's not totally the same as getting pregnant in our, you know, 20s and early 30s. As we get older, there will be risks of, you know, having diabetes in pregnancy, high blood pressure, preeclampsia, needing a C-section. All these risks go up gradually as we get older. If we're carrying the pregnancy, it is a stress test for the body. but the actual pregnancy rates are maintained fair, more or less. And the miscarriage risk too is dependent on the age of the egg.
So I want to repeat this because this is a very common question. So the uterus doesn't age like the ovaries. And so you can transfer and have a similar pregnancy rate as the age of the embryo, not the age of the uterus. So if you transfer at 48 and the embryo was frozen at 35, it's a 35-year-old pregnancy in that sense, pregnancy rates, not a 50-year-old pregnancy rate. And there's risk factors with aging and pregnancy, but it has nothing to do with the fertility side of it, the embryo or the uterus. It's just risk factors with aging and pregnancy is stressful on the body. Mm-hmm. But the pregnancy rates are the same. And again, another reason why smoking, drinking, not sleeping, doing things, if you're conceiving later in life, just be as healthy as possible. Going back to my LeBron James basketball player, you know, take care of your body because pregnancy is, it can be stressful on it. That was our tangent. Going back to this, the strategy of, so there's other strategies like making embryos. So if somebody at 40 came to you and they're single, because this is a real scenario in my practice, and they want to freeze their eggs because they don't have a relationship yet. This is where you'd have the discussion because the egg freezing may not turn into an embryo. Because what we were talking about is, and we were comparing egg freezing to an IVF, like an embryo, the egg freezing, it's a similar procedure as an IVF for embryo. You're doing the same stimulation, you do the retrieve. Now you have all these eggs. So if it's an egg freezing, you freeze those eggs. If it's an IVF making embryos, you now inseminate those eggs. And then over 5 days, you watch if they fertilize and grow, and there's attrition. So this is where it's different, because if you froze all those eggs, you don't know which one of those are going to turn into embryos and which ones will not make it. But if you do an embryo, make an embryo, you now have new data because you now know how many embryos you got to freeze. So, and you have much more data and experience knowing how those embryos turn into live births. And you also can do some genetic screening on those embryos to see if there's any abnormalities or not.
Exactly. The process is exactly the same for eggs and embryos in terms of the medications you're taking, the ultrasounds, the whole process. It's just what happens after the eggs come out. It's, do we freeze them right away or do we fertilize them? And the main difference is that, yeah, once you fertilize them, you see how your eggs behave, how many embryos you create. And that can give you a bit more of a concrete, something to hang your hat on if you're really wanting more of a reassurance that, yes, I could have a realistic chance of a baby with these eggs, is see how many embryos they make. And you could even then do genetic testing on the embryos. And that's one of the main issues as eggs get older, is they tend to make more genetically abnormal embryos. So then you could purposely screen your embryos. And if you do have a normal one, that is, you know, one of your highest probabilities of getting a baby. And some people behave better than their age-based predictions, right? Some 40-year-olds, maybe you'll make all your embryos are genetically normal, in which case, great. It might be worthwhile to know that, or the opposite is true. So then you can make some other contingency plans. But I get asked a lot, like, which is better, eggs or embryos? I mean, there's no better or worse. It's kind of like what's right for you, because some people are not open to using a sperm donor if you don't have a partner. And that's the crux of freezing embryos, is you need to know where your sperm is coming from. And that's, you know, that's where it's important to do some soul searching and just see what you want to do.
The probability, though, embryos, you have a better prediction from embryos than from egg freezing. But like you said, these are why it has to be a one-on-one discussion consultation to find what your needs are. Because if you're single at 40 and you're open to sperm, then at least you know you have donor sperm. Then you can make embryos, and then you have a chance of, you have a better idea of the probability of a live birth than if you just froze the eggs. But it comes down to, there's no perfect way to do this, unfortunately. There's no guarantee and no perfect way. It's individualized. And what I wanted to kind of share and bring up here at this part of our chat is, you know, just to find a balance, because there's a lot of like hype on the internet. Egg freezing is the answer. You freeze your eggs, you preserve, you're good. Now you get to do whatever you want for the rest of your life. And I think it's a little oversold. And so I want to talk on that side of it, just saying there's risk to it, there's cost to it, and there's no guarantee. Then all the media people that poo-poo the IVF clinics doing egg freezing, saying, you know, you know, this, it's too popular, too many people running to it, and they don't know. I want to take the other side of it, like how fortunate we are that this technology exists, because 50 plus years ago, we weren't being able to do this. And so we are able to help preserve fertility for many individuals that we could not have before. And people, because of a cancer diagnosis or just because of their situation, life situation, they're able to now have children later in life. And so you can look at it from both sides. This is where it becomes individual. So when I see the overhype, yeah, it can be overhyped. But also when they really get upset with clinics doing this, I'm like, this is such a blessing to have this technology. If it was all free and no side effects, yes, but that's like everything in life. I wish, you know, if everything was perfect and easy, yes, it would be better, even better. But I just want to share that there's a balance here and everybody has to look at their life situations, their needs, and get a consult so you can talk to your local clinic, if you're in Vancouver or Olive, and just find out if you're a candidate for egg freezing, what does that even mean? What your probabilities are, learn what the risk factors are, learn how many eggs you may need to freeze, what the probability of live birth rate is, or maybe you'll find out that making embryos is an option for you, or maybe you'll find out that learn more about donor eggs, and there's another option for you to parent. And so there's so many things available to you, and Google, Dr. Google gives us some great information, but a lot of people come to my practice thinking this is what they need to do because an influencer said do it this way, and that worked for them, but you got to find out how it works for you. So that was my little speech at the end, just because I see both sides of it, Aryu, where some people are coming in saying, you know, is it really this good? And then some people are criticizing it. And I feel there's no judgment on it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an option. It's not the be all end all. You're so right. Like you can't really just set it and forget it. Like you still have to keep in mind that, you know, this is just one thing you have frozen, but it's not necessarily going to guarantee anything. But it does, you know, take the pressure off for a lot of people where you feel like they've bought themselves a bit of time. Yeah. And if you're not, you know, whether you're in a relationship or not, it gives you the most reproductive flexibility to decide what you want to do with your eggs later.
It gives you hope, and just get your information so you don't have false hope, because until you have a live birth, there's no guarantee. That's the thing. So if you freeze your eggs or if you freeze embryos, it's just increased your probability. Keyword here is probability of a live birth. It hasn't guaranteed it. And that's what life is about, knowing this and then making your decision when you put yourself through a procedure like egg freezing and the cost and the emotional part of it. You just want to be as knowledgeable and as aware as possible going into it. And then there are people that are going to go through this that are going to get a live birth from this. And there's going to be people that are going to do this, like you said at the very beginning, that will never need to use this. And they're okay because they didn't want to use it. They did it, so they just had a little bit of hope and reassurance that there's another chance for them later in life if needed.
Mm-hmm.
Appreciate that. Is there anything else you wanted to share about egg freezing before we wrap up?
No, I think we've covered all the really important things.
So going back to my LeBron, as you think, I'll just, the LeBron James guy, basketball player, he treats his body like a temple. And this is the integration side with Olive as well, at AccuBalance. We like to look into diet. There's supplements to support your health and to help optimize your egg quality. We also use acupuncture, low-level laser therapy, meditation and spiritual practices or stress reduction practices, just a holistic approach to bring the inflammation down, lower oxidative stress, improve mitochondrial function. This is our goal, to support the egg and sperm quality so you can be at your peak fertility potential for your age when you go through any of these procedures. So that's our holistic integrative approach. Aryu, thank you again. Check out her donor egg talk as well. There's a good connection or relationship here with these two talks. So I think it's a nice one to listen to. It's one of the ones we did earlier in the first season with Dr. Zhang. And then I hope this was helpful regarding egg freezing. And again, you can talk to your medical doctor to get a referral to Olive. And also on the Olive website under egg freezing, they do have a little calculator to give you some predictions based on your age for egg freezing. And again, it is a general calculator. General means not you, because there is no average human being. There's just you, but they've taken all the averages and worked this out. So it's just to give you an idea, but please do talk to your reproductive endocrinologist to find out more specifics for yourself. Aryu, thank you very much for joining me today and sharing these clinical pearls. I really appreciate it.
Always a pleasure chatting with you, Lauren. Take care. Hey.
You too.
If you're looking for support to grow your family, contact AccuBalance Wellness Center. At AccuBalance, they help you reach your peak fertility potential through their integrative approach, using low-level laser therapy, fertility acupuncture, and naturopathic medicine. Download the AccuBalance Fertility Diet and Dr. Brown's video for mastering manifestation and clearing subconscious blocks. Go to AccuBalance.ca, that's ACUBalance.ca.
Thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of Conscious Fertility, the show that helps you receive life on purpose. Please take a moment to subscribe to the show and join the community of women and men on their path to peak fertility and choosing to live consciously on purpose. I would love to continue this conversation with you, so please direct message me on Instagram at Lauren Brown Official. That's Instagram, Lauren Brown Official. Or you can visit my websites, laurenbrown.com and accubalance.ca. Until the next episode, stay curious, and for a few moments, bring your awareness to your heart center and breathe.